This is Kelly Gregg, G-R-E-G-G, of kellygregg.com, and this is part of the series of health topics. This is the section on artificial sweeteners. I would imagine that many who are listening to this have used artificial sweeteners, hereafter called non-caloric artificial sweeteners, or NAS, before listening to this podcast. Many have probably also tried weight loss diets, and NAS may have been a part of that, and actually it sounds like a great idea. I am old enough that I remember when NAS became popular. Finally, we had an answer to obesity. Just eat your normal diet and replace some things, like soda pop, with products containing NAS. At a minimum, you should lose about a pound a month. Now everyone can say goodbye to obesity. Many NAS have come along since then, and the answer is always the same. Very few induce weight loss. Many studies have shown that NAS is just a poor way to lose weight. We have tried changing your diet a little and using NAS, or telling people to use NAS when they get a craving for sweets, or just use NAS for everything you drink except water. Nothing seemed to work, at least no better than the normal diet recommendations. I used to explain this mainly to myself by saying that NAS are so sweet it desensitizes your brain and increases the desire to eat sweet things. I still think there may be some element of this involved. NAS comes up all the time in fasting. There have been worldwide conferences and many study committees on the subject, and we finally agree to a conclusion. You may drink NAS while you are fasting. This was on the front page of many papers, as well as numerous documentaries which are made about it, and I am surprised if you have never heard of it. So drink as much NAS as you want while you fast, and maybe that will help. Wait, not so fast. It seems like it does not help make fasting any easier. In fact, it may increase your desire for carbohydrates. Drink non-caloric liquids, such as coffee, tea, bone broth, electrolytes, but if possible, avoid NAS. I am going to review a study for you that will make you say, "Why have I never heard of this before?" The study is Artificial Sweeteners Induce Glucose Intolerance by Altering the Gut Microbiota. This is by Jotham, J-O-T-H-A-M, Suez, S-U-E-Z, and Tal, T-A-L, Corum, K-O-R-E-M, in Nature, 514, page 181-186, 2014. I will review the study in my own words and offer commentary at the end. Most NAS passes through the gut without being metabolized by you. Aspartame is an exception and is metabolized. NAS reaches the gut biome and something happens there. We already know your gut biome is modulated by diet and other conditions in your body, like obesity and diabetes. Although now I am not sure if it does not have some effect on these diseases, as in contributing to their cause, rather than being modified by them. This study concerns mice, which means you can make almost anything happen to them. I usually do not believe you can apply everything that happens in mice to humans, but this may be an exception. You take a bunch of mice and do glucose tolerance tests on them. I think most of us know what a glucose tolerance test is in a human, but you can also do the same thing to mice, and you can get a chart of the normal values. Take six groups of mice and put glucose, sucrose, nothing, and three different NAS in the water for the mice for 11 weeks. The NAS was saccharin, sucralose, and aspartame. At the end, all the mice with NAS in the water developed an abnormal glucose tolerance test. None of the mice without NAS did, even those with sucrose water. Then we will take the NAS that seemed to cause the most effect, which was saccharin, and give the mice a low-carb, that is, high-fat diet. You probably know by now that we think a high-carbohydrate diet leads to diabetes and an abnormal glucose tolerance test. Hence, if anything, we would think that a low-carb diet may protect mice from an abnormal glucose tolerance test. It ends up that the low-carb diet did not protect the mice at all, and they still ended up with an abnormal glucose tolerance test when they had saccharin in the water. So we have found out that giving glucose to mice doesn't prevent an abnormal glucose tolerance test, but giving NAS water to mice does induce an abnormal test, despite giving them a low-carb diet. I'm sure some of you may be saying, if we give mice enough of anything, we can induce almost anything. Let's do the same thing, except we give them a level of NAS which is approved by the FDA. In other words, we give them the same relative amount that the FDA says is safe to give to humans. As you may have guessed, even with the low-carb diet, the same thing happened, and the NAS mice got abnormal glucose tolerance tests, despite receiving what we think was a safe dose. Now let's take a couple groups of mice. We will feed one side normal mice chow, and the other side low-carb mice chow. Some groups on both sides will get normal water to drink, and some groups on both sides will get saccharin water to drink. We'll examine these mice more closely, doing metabolic profiles and measuring energy expenditure, making sure both appear to be the same. Regardless of diet, mice with NAS had higher insulin levels and more glucose intolerance, despite having essentially the same energy expenditure. We go back and repeat all of these groups and test with lean mice and obese mice, and the results are still the same. Doesn't matter if you have a fat or skinny mice, and it doesn't matter if you feed them a low-carb or normal-carb chow. So how does the NAS do this, or rather cause this? Maybe it's the gut biome. I won't go into the gut biome here, but most of you intuitively know what this is. Once again, we take groups of mice fed normal and low-carb chow. Once again, we'll take groups of mice with one fed normal chow and the other fed low-carb chow. In both of these groups, some are given normal water and some are given NAS water. And again, we find abnormal glucose tolerance test in the NAS water mice. Now we take all the mice and treat them with an antibiotic for gram-negative bacilli. After 4 weeks, the abnormal glucose tolerance test in the NAS mice has disappeared, and now all the mice are the same as far as glucose intolerance. The same thing happened when the test was repeated, except with a gram-positive antibiotic. So NAS induced glucose intolerance, and antibiotic therapy, whether it be for gram-positive or gram-negative bacilli, eliminated the glucose intolerance. By now, we have to be suspecting there's something going on with the gut biome. Somehow, the NAS has changed the biome such that a different species has been able to predominate and change the glucose tolerance. Treating with antibiotics negated the advantage the NAS-treated biome had, and reverted it to back to the normal biome. Okay, let's go down this pathway a little further. We take two groups of mice, one with and one without NAS. Then we get some germ-free mice with no gut biome. In other words, no bacteria in their gut. The germ-free mice have a normal glucose tolerance test. Then we do fecal transplantation to the germ-free mice from the two groups. You probably guessed the result. The germ-free mice transplanted from the NAS mice ended up with glucose intolerance. The germ-free mice transplanted from the normal mice did not. When we fed germ-free mice NAS without giving them a fecal transplant, and none of them developed an abnormal glucose tolerance test. Then we tested for all kinds of bacteria in the feces of these mice. The NAS mice had an obviously different biome with overgrowth of certain species. Even using tissue culture, we could take feces from normal mice, grow it in tissue culture, add NAS to one of the cultures, transplant these cultures into germ-free mice, and the ones who got the culture in which the NAS was added got glucose intolerance. Finally, let's get some humans involved. We take 381 non-diabetic people with an average age of 43 and look at food frequency questionnaires, especially regarding NAS consumption. There were significant positive correlations between NAS consumption and increased weight, higher fasting blood glucose, higher hemoglobin A1C, and more glucose intolerance measured by glucose tolerance test. This was true even when adjusted by BMI. This reflects what we were talking about in the beginning. It does not appear that using NAS protects you or even helps you in the area of weight loss. In fact, this may indicate almost the opposite. If we then compare the people with the most NAS consumption with people with none, the composition of the gut biome was different in the two groups, with the members of NAS groups having biomes similar to each other, and the non-NAS group having biomes similar to each other, but markedly different from the NAS group. Also, this exacerbated the difference in abnormal metabolic changes that were noted. So the group with the most NAS consumption had the worst metabolic outcomes and also had a different biome from those with no NAS consumption. Let's look at a last brief test on a few humans. We take 7 healthy humans who do not normally consume any NAS. For 1 week, on days 2 through 7, the FDA's maximum acceptable daily intake of NAS was given as 3 divided daily doses. The humans were given glucose tolerance tests daily. After 1 week, 4 of the 7 developed significantly poorer glycemic responses 5 to 7 days after consumption of NAS. In other words, it took 4 to 7 days for those who responded to NAS to worsen their glucose response. These were the NAS responders. We also evaluated the gut biome of all the humans on day 1 and day 7. The gut biome of the responders changed between that period of time, whereas the non-responders had no change in their gut biome. If we looked at day 1, it ends up those who were predisposed to respond to NAS all had a similar gut biome, whereas those who did not respond to NAS all had a similar but different gut biome. Even though everyone did not have an abnormal glucose tolerance test at day 1. In other words, it appears the responder's biome was predestined to develop glucose intolerance in response to NAS even before the study started. Also, remember, all of the participants did not take NAS before the study started. The people who responded to NAS, even though they had not taken NAS previously, were different from the people who did not respond. The biome of the NAS responders also changed during the week, while the non-NAS responders' biome remained the same. Finally, let's take stool samples from 2 NAS responders and 2 NAS non-responders on day 1 and day 7. We then do a fecal transplant into the germ-free mice. For the non-NAS responders, transfer of day 1 and day 7 into the germ-free mice did not make any difference in the mice as far as glucose intolerance was concerned. For the NAS responders, Transfer of day 1 stool made no difference, but transfer of day 7 stools caused glucose intolerance in these germ-free mice. The change in the NAS responder's biome caused glucose intolerance, even though the biome before the NAS challenge did not. Let's sum this up a little. NAS changed the biome in mice regardless of the mice diet. This change led to glucose intolerance. Putting this changed biome into germ-free mice also led to glucose intolerance. Giving NAS to virgin healthy humans caused 4 of 7 to develop glucose intolerance. Transferring the stool of these NAS responders into mice induced glucose intolerance after day 7, but not after day 1. The NAS changed the biome after 1 week to one that can induce glucose intolerance. My comments. Why did this happen? I'm pretty sure it is related to the gut biome. What did this NAS-exposed gut biome do to change the glucose tolerance test? Maybe the new biome caused a leakier gut such that the glucose was absorbed more rapidly. Certainly the amount of glucose in the gut remained the same. Perhaps this biome somehow affected the insulin response to glucose. After all, the GLP-1 receptors are in the gut. Do NAS-induced gut biomes directly affect the brain through the vagus nerve, causing a craving for sweets? Whatever it was, it happened in 1 week. I don't know the answer, but soon after reading this article, I quit drinking Diet Dr. Pepper. Oddly enough, it may be that sugar sweetened pop is better for you. I gave you the reference at the beginning. I thought this study was hard to believe. Why had I not heard of this study years ago? Why was it not front page news? Why didn't someone tell me about it when they knew I had a mild Diet Dr. Pepper addiction? These are now my comments. We know that fat diets, carb diets, and protein diets all affect a change in the microbiome in humans. We know that NAS changes the human microbiome, as well as all kinds of other different medications. We know that changes in the microbiome can change metabolic processes in humans related to glucose control. We know that metabolic byproducts of bacteria of the microbiome can affect the integrity of the gut wall. We think that leaky gut may allow proteins to enter the body and induce an immune response with various and sometimes severe consequences. Is type 2 diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis actually a bacterial disease? Now, don't say this is crazy. I remember how surprised everyone was when it was discovered that bacteria caused ulcers and the treatment was to give people antibiotics. Is the gut the key to the treatment for much of our metabolic and autoimmune disease? I don't know at this point, but we'll see what the future holds. More recent studies indicated that stevia-based sweeteners do not seem to have an impact on the gut biome. Of course, stevia does have a few calories and is not an artificial ingredient. This probably means that all natural low-calorie sweeteners do not have adverse effects on the biome, but we can't be certain of that. I am switching my pop to the glucose stevia sweetened Coke. Of course, soon after that, I discovered they were going to stop making this. Now I'm on bubbly and aha. Not quite the same. Whatever you do, even if you avoid NAS, do not start on high fructose corn syrup sweetened pop. There are many reasons for this, and you have to read my book to figure out what they are. We have long recommended that to lose weight, you cut down on calories. We have also long advised that to do this, you may want to use NAS. This is actually a version of the eat less, exercise more diet. It is possible to lose weight on this diet, especially if you quit your job, exercise 8 hours a day, and decrease your caloric intake. But no matter what, even if you lose weight, there is a high failure rate over the next few years, and you return to your obese status. This is true even if you get stomach stapling. I do advise you to read the article, but it is not an easy read. Most of you will be better off if you just go to YouTube and search Jothan, J-O-T-H-A-M, Suez, S-U-E-Z, the author, who goes over his study in a video. If you do happen to watch the YouTube, you will notice the second half is a project to try to advise an individual diet for people to help keep their glucose down. People seem to have a variable post-meal glucose response to identical meals, and the microbiome seems to be a principal reason for this. In my book, Diet and Health, I go into much more detail in what I consider to be the maintenance diet for most people. Those who have had insulin resistance need a slightly different diet. What I can discern from the second half of the YouTube is that the gut biome is affected by diet, because of this, glucose response is affected. I can also surmise that epigenetics may play a dominant role in affecting this change, and that this occurs much more rapidly than I previously thought. We recall that the glycemic index judges food, that is carbohydrates, as to their capability to rapidly raise the glucose level. The higher the index, the more rapidly it makes the glucose go up. Those of you who have read my book know I believe that the rise in insulin is more important than the rise in glucose. Certainly the rise in glucose reflects the rise in insulin in normal people, but insulin can rise without eating any food. The sharp spike in insulin secretion is steeper than the spike in glucose, and I believe contributes more to the development of insulin resistance. Dr. Suez also investigates the specific change in the microbiome associated with NAS. Glycan is a group of carbohydrates containing many monosaccharides that can be linked to proteins. From the diet point of view, we can consider them as fiber in that we do not directly break them down into glucose like we do starch. Our gut biome does break them down and uses them for energy. Our colon benefits from the short-chain fatty acids produced by the biome and uses these fatty acids for energy also. He finds that saccharin alters the biome by enhancing bacteria that increase glycan degradation and increases energy harvest from food. Saccharin may save you some calories by lowering sugar intake, but may increase the calories from food normally not digested for energy. I still believe that it has a central effect on the brain to increase hunger and stimulate sweet-seeking behavior. The takeaway from my point of view is that NAS does not really help you metabolically. This should be no surprise, since for 99% of recorded human history, we did not use NAS. We have used them in the last 50 years, and now we have 40% of the U.S. population with obesity, prediabetes, and type 2 diabetes. My advice is cut down on sucrose, cut back dramatically on NAS, stop high fructose corn syrup completely, use stone ground bread for the most part, and fast 12 hours from your last meal of the day to your first. See KellyGregg.com for further details.